you go through this mourning process of kind of what you thought your life was going to be like and how your kid was going to have all these opportunities. And then you have to watch them every day suffer. And you have to be the one giving them shots and forcing them to take pills and telling them, no, they can't do this. And it's hard as a parent.
Welcome to Health Hats, empowering people as they travel together toward best health. I'm Danny Van Leeuwen, a two-legged, cisgender, old white man of privilege, living in a food oasis who can afford many hats and knows a little bit about a lot of healthcare and a lot about very little. Most people wear hats one at a time, but I wear them all at once. We will listen and learn about what it takes to adjust to life's realities in healthcare's Tower of Babel. Let's make some sense of all of this. Amy Gleason and I know each other through the Society of Participatory Medicine. Amy is an expert in health data and health technology. She is an entrepreneur and a mom. I interviewed her daughter Morgan in the previous episode of Health Hats, the podcast. I learned quite a bit during our conversation. We discussed parenting style, cues for calibrating autonomy, the importance of parent support groups, managing depression, self-care, and advocacy by transitioning young adults. Here's my conversation with Amy Gleason.
Amy, tell me a little about yourself.
I have spent most of my career working in healthcare, mainly in healthcare technology. I worked mainly with electronic medical records and practice management systems for both the provider and the healthcare system. I've tried to get interoperability working and data sharing between providers and patients through the physicians. And I've tried it from the patient side. I co-founded a company called CareSync after my daughter was diagnosed with liver disease.
CareSync, I know that.
And so I've worked at it from the patient side, and then now I'm working at the U.S. Digital Service, working at interoperability from the government side.
Wow. Where were you the first time you realized health was fragile?
That's a hard question. I think the first time really in my life was when my grandmother had a stroke, and she had surgery, and they really didn't have a good solution for her. And so they kind of just sewed her back up and left her to live out the rest of her life in a nursing home. And it was very scary as a child to see somebody you love in that situation. And sometimes we would come visit her and she didn't know who we were. Oh. Other times she did. And that was a lot for a child to kind of take in. So I guess that's the first time I really realized how fragile health is.
Yeah. Thank you. What does healthy look like to you?
Healthy to me would mean that you're able to live life to your fullest.
You know that I've spoken to Morgan twice. She helped me conceptualize this project I'm on, and then I interviewed her. She's impressive.
Thank you. I'm proud of her.
Yeah, a lot to be proud of. And it seems like you've been pretty deliberate in guiding Morgan to independence and adulthood. So can you tell me a little bit about that process for you as her mother?
Yes, from a healthcare perspective or just in general?
Start with in general.
So my father always said that he believes the job of a parent is to let your child make all kinds of mistakes. And as soon as they see you getting too far, then they kind of grab you back in. And I always thought that was a really good way to look at parenting and to not be a hovering parent, but to also make sure they don't get in too much trouble. Mm-hmm. So I tried to do the same. So I think I took a little bit different approach than some of my friends with their kids and was a little more open to letting her try things and experience life, and tried to, encourage her, like while we were doing things, explaining why, this is why you have to do this as an adult. This is why I'm doing this, so that she could understand as she went along. So I remember being in college and being a little like, what? Why do you have to do this stuff? So I tried to explain a lot more as we went along, just mm-hmm. to kind of help independence and encourage that. Of course, Morgan's journey is a little different because she was diagnosed with a rare disease when she was 11. And so she had to grow up a lot faster than your average 11-year-old. Had a lot more responsibilities to worry about, taking care of herself. And, you know, she couldn't just go spend the night with a friend. She had to spend the night with 21 medications she takes every day. And she had to watch out for symptoms. And she had to tell them if she was doing too much and, you know, all of that stuff. And so parenting her was a little different. I was always very deliberate about trying to help her learn how to go through the healthcare system, because I've seen too many times you go into the office visit and you leave and you're on your way home and you're, oh, I forgot to ask about this, or, oh, I didn't really get a good answer to that, or I'm not really sure what I'm supposed to do next. And so we would practice on the way to the visit. The hospital where her doctor, main doctor was about 45 minutes away. So we had a 45-minute car ride every time. And so I would kind of get her to, what are your goals out of this visit? What is it you want to accomplish? And I think another thing when you have a chronic disease is it's kind of hard to explain what's happened to you in the last month or the last 3 months, because all you can really remember is yesterday. And it's all kind of variable. And so I'd get her to think about, remember last week when you were having this, you know, remember, think back before this week, how are you feeling? You know, remember when you were frustrated because you couldn't do whatever, and kind of help her recall that stuff and make an agenda for what she wanted out of the visit. Mm-hmm. And to make sure, you know, when they said, how are you doing? She didn't just say fine, but she actually could give a good answer. So I knew at some point she would want to leave and go away and live her adult life. And she needed to be ready for that.
What cues were you seeing or looking for as you were sort of calibrating this autonomy and independence? Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm figuring at 11, it's like, oh shit, what is this? For everybody, for the whole family, you know, and then there's like a period of you kind of got a sense, and then you're starting to think beyond the next day and the next symptom and the next appointment. As you got past that initial shock and adjustment, and you started thinking a little bit bigger, so you were starting to think of another week, another month, she's getting older, another year. So what were the cues you were looking for or seeing that helped you calibrate?
That's a good question. So I should say that in the beginning, I was certainly not worrying about any kind of transitioning her to anything or even any of that. She was very sick when she was diagnosed. She couldn't stand up off the floor. She couldn't walk up the stairs. Mm. I didn't really let her do anything, actually, in the beginning. I was just a mom, and I kind of drove all of it. I kept the symptom history. I took over at the doctor's office, and I would ask her, hey, do you have anything to add, Morgan? Did I get anything wrong? And kind of pull her in that way. But she also didn't really have a lot of interest in talking to the doctors at that point. She just didn't feel good, you know? I think there's a point where they're ready to do that kind of stuff. So for Morgan, she got irritated when they would talk to me instead of her at some point. And that was
that's a good sign. Oh, yeah.
Say, okay, at the next visit, you talk and I'm not going to talk unless I have something to correct or interject. And otherwise, it's all you. Mm-hmm. And so she would start off and then she would say, hey, Mom, is this right? Or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of do it together. Mm-hmm. But after a while, she just took over and I really just sat and listened. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think the other thing is as she got older into like where she could drive, 16, she would pick up her prescriptions at the pharmacy and kind of get through all that. And we got this, you know, the pharmacy app on her phone so she could track her own prescriptions and refills and see all of that stuff. So I think just kind of over time we added in little things. Mm-hmm. She didn't really make a lot of appointments before she went to school, but she was involved in the process. Like we would talk about it and she would hear me making them, but she didn't really want to call and make them. So she would, you know, just kind of give that job to me. But So that was something when she got to college, she kind of had to learn to do on her own, was actually call and figure out how to make appointments. And she was kind of frustrated in the beginning. It's not the easiest process, as you know.
Oh, yeah.
And then, like, from a payment perspective, I've tried to kind of help her understand how it works, but because she's still on our insurance and I pay the bills for her for most of her bills, that I don't know that that part's totally transitioned, but, you know, we talk about it in January, you know, deductibles have just reset. When you go, they might ask you for a larger payment, be prepared, you know, call me if you need me. And so she's kind of learned that way, but she certainly isn't like totally understanding all that part yet.
Right. So you've been involved in healthcare and technology, as you were telling us, it's been your career. You and I, we're different because we're not the norm, a lifetime of experience with various parts of the healthcare system. When you look at what you've had to deal with, what has been helpful or what would have been helpful to you, either just knowing all you know, but then putting yourself in the place of the people you advocate for in your, you know, day-to-day life?
Right. So interestingly enough, I hadn't lived in the Tampa area very long when Morgan was diagnosed. And so I didn't, like all of most of my career, I hadn't had a network of people I knew in healthcare. So if I needed a doctor, I could just find out who to go to and that kind of stuff. And in Florida, I didn't have that kind of network. So in some ways I was kind of just like everyone else. And that was a hard process to figure out of how to find out which hospital to even go to, much less which doctor. Now, her rare disease, there was only one pediatric rheumatologist, so that was pretty easy. But the rest of the doctors, it was kind of hard to figure out how to find the best ones. I'm very involved with a parent group with the Cure JM Foundation for other kids, other parents of kids like Morgan. And so,
and wait, really, say again what the name of it is.
The Cure JM Juvenile Myositis Foundation.
Okay.
And the parents in that group really helped me a tremendous amount. The day Morgan was diagnosed, actually, I was Googling, and it's a very rare disease, and I found a parent message board, and Morgan was supposed to be going to camp, actually, away in a different state, a spend the night camp. In like 3 days, and I was like, what do I do? So I posted on, because of course she wanted to go. So I posted on this message board, I think it was like 6 o'clock at night. And a mom commented within an hour and was like, hey, what's your phone number? I'll call you. So she called, she's like, get a piece of paper. And she just rattled off all this information and I just wrote it all down. And then I said, well, we can't get an appointment with this doctor for 3 months because there's only one in this area. And she said, oh, there's an expert in this disease. Here's her phone number. Here's her email address. If you email her, she'll email you probably the same day. So it's, you know, Friday at 8 o'clock at night or something. And I email her thinking I'm never going to get an answer. And she actually answered me within the hour and said, I'll see you in July. Here's the date and time. She can go to camp. These are the precautions to give to the nurse and go get her if these things happen.
Wow.
So it was incredible. So I learned very early on that this parent group was like my lifeline. So they teach you all the things that doctors don't know and don't have time because they don't live with the disease. So how to deal with school and education and how to get, you know, enough accommodations in place so they can go to school, or if they can't go to school, how to get homeschool, how to deal with sports when they want to play sports. How do you figure that out? You know, can you do it some way? So they had suggestions. Like Morgan didn't play baseball, but some of the kids do, and they had ideas on how they could be involved in the team, but not play baseball. So they didn't lose because, you know, especially kids, that's kind of their whole support network is their friends. And if you play a sport, like Morgan was a gymnast and cheerleader, and when she got sick, she kind of lost that whole group of friends, which was really kind of her whole identity. You know, that parent group also encouraged us to find a new group somehow, and Morgan ended up riding horses, and that was a whole new group. She could ride a horse because she could sit on the horse, and it did a lot of the work until she could get stronger. But she got a friend group out of that, you know, that she could relate to and do things with, and they really encouraged how to live life, not so much the medical, but also, I mean, we ask each other questions all the time. Does your kid have this? Is this normal? You know, have you tried that? So I would encourage people to find a parent community or for parents or, you know, any kind of patient community. Morgan now has, they have a young adults group with that same
foundation,
and she uses that a lot.
What's the chatter in that group about this young adult to adult transition? What's that kind of, what are the issues that come up there?
I think the biggest one is in high school, as you start to think about college. That's what stresses most parents out, or whatever their next transition is. If it's not college, they're, you know, when they want to move out of the house. Mm-hmm. That seems to be when the alarm bells go off and parents start going, my child wants to go 6 hours away. What do I do? Or I don't think they can move out of my house. I don't think they're well enough. You know, what do I do? And that's when all the, you know, Morgan went 7 hours away from home in a rural town. I really wanted her to go somewhere where there's like a big academic medical center. She went to a small rural town in Auburn, Alabama.
Yeah.
And I was nervous about it, but it's worked out great. She's been fantastic there and she's figured it out. So I now share that story with all the parents that are worried and say, these are all the things we did. So we made an appointment with the doctor before she went there. We, you know, we did all these things, did accommodations at the school. Like we set it all up ahead of time. And so now that's kind of a pathway for all these other parents that have the same issue. And then we talk at our annual conference about transition a lot. That's one of the hot topics. And we usually have a nurse, one of the places come and talk about how they suggest you do transition from the medical side. And then we have parents talk about how we've helped our kids transition. And then we usually have one of the young adults, like Morgan, talk about what it was like for them. So I just think sharing information is the best way.
Morgan seems so centered in her life. I don't know that that's like usual or unusual. You know, we all had our young adult to adult transitions where we were successful in things and unsuccessful in others, and we lived through them. One of the things that I've seen in, you know, I have MS. And so one of the things that I've seen in the multiple sclerosis community, there's a lot of depression. I almost, should I say this publicly? I mean, I'm sort of hesitant sometimes to get involved in the MS community because there is such a, it's so strong, the depression. And so, you know, my way of dealing with that is I avoid it just because, you know, I'm pathologically optimistic and it's, you know, it works for me and I don't want to mess with it. As a teenager, you know, I was so, you know, I wasn't diagnosed till I was an adult. But as a teenager, you know, life is so up and down and so, you know, everything just seems so dramatic. So do you have a sense from your own experience and being with this support group that you're part of, is that a big issue? Is that another big issue, people dealing with their unhappinesses?
I definitely think, not just from the kids, the parents also go through quite a lot. I think sometimes it may be worse in the kids stage with the parents than with the kids, because you go through this mourning process of kind of what you thought your life was going to be like and how your kid was going to have all these opportunities, and then you have to watch them every day suffer, and you have to be the one giving them shots and forcing them to take pills and telling them, no, they can't do this. And it's hard as a parent. Not that it's not hard for the sick kid. Of course it is. But I think sometimes, Morgan was 11, so she was a little older. But sometimes these kids are one or two, and they don't really know what's, they don't have any other thing to compare it to, you know. Right. But the parents really struggle.
Yeah.
So we definitely talk a lot about that in the parent group, about how to keep yourself positive and to set a positive tone for your child, because they follow you also when you're the parent. But especially teenagers and younger too, there's definitely, it's definitely a hot topic, depression. You know, a lot of the kids take steroids and they get the big weight gain and the big moon face. And Morgan was going into seventh grade when she was diagnosed, in the summer of seventh grade. So she was 68 pounds when she was diagnosed in June. And when she started school in August, she was 98 pounds. That's a big change for
a
child.
That's a big change, yes.
And every, I hope she's not mad at me for saying this, but every, for a while, every Monday she would go to get dressed for school and she didn't fit in her clothes and we'd have to go buy new clothes on the way to school. And that was hard. I mean, it was really hard.
Yeah.
Thankfully, Morgan had some really good friends. She had two really good friends in that middle school period that just stuck by her. And she had some amazing teachers that would FaceTime her while she was in the hospital, so she felt part of class. And I think all those people gave her a little boost to her confidence to kind of help her keep going. But it was hard. And I think dealing with the mental health aspects of illness are very important. And they shouldn't be minimized. And they should be addressed and try to help. You know, it's a normal thing. I think it shouldn't be a stigma. I think people are worried about all of that. I think the parents worry some about the young adult and teen groups that maybe they might have a negative energy sometimes without parents there to interfere. But just like you're very positive and I'm positive, there are kids that are very positive and they kind of combat that side of it, I think, in the group from what I've understood from Morgan. I think you have to be real and call people out and say, look, if you need help, you need to get help, but you can't be bringing me down all the time. I need help too, you know, and just have a real conversation about it.
I was talking to another mother last week, and one of the things that she said that drove her a little crazy with doctors in the transitions was that her experience of life was it was one transition after another. There was a 6-year-old transition. Mm. There was a 10-year-old transition. I'm putting words in her mouth, but the way she felt like the system dealt with her was that there was a transition and it was like off and then the new was on. And it was like jumping over a big chasm to the new, when really life was these little transitions, forward, back, forward, back.
I didn't have that experience, I think probably because Morgan was older when she was diagnosed. And by the time she was, you know, doing stable, you know, was doing well enough, she was even older. But I have a sense of what you're saying, that it kind of seemed like the doctors and the nurses would talk to me all the time and not to Morgan, and that would drive her crazy. But then all of a sudden they were like, well, you must transition and you need to get ready for this and da da da. And it was like, where have you been for the last 2 years? You know? So I can see a sense of that. Like when she was going to college, we had made a plan and thought it was a pretty good plan. And her doc, one of her doctors was just kind of like, that's the dumbest plan I've ever heard of. I was like, okay, well, where have you been? You know, we've been talking about this every visit for the past 2 years, you know? So I can see that to some degree.
I guess I want to ask a little more about you. You know, you've been talking about this community and how that's been very supportive of you. So how have you taken care of yourself in all of this?
I think that's probably the hardest part of being a caregiver, is to actually, you know, you worry so much about other people that you don't take care of yourself. Of course, during all this period, I had a company that I had co-founded and had other family members. My mother got cancer and my husband, like, we just have had a lot of issues. So yeah, it's hard to take time and take care of yourself.
Yeah.
I think Morgan and I have gotten to the place where if I'm with her and I need a break, I just say, I'm going to step out for a little bit and I'll be back. And she doesn't get her feelings hurt. And same, she'll say, I need you to leave. And I'll leave for a little bit and come back. And so I think over time, I've kind of started to figure that out a little better, but I certainly didn't figure it out and probably still haven't very well, but it's a challenge.
It is a challenge.
See the show notes or my website for more information, to subscribe or contribute. If you like it, share it. Thanks.
One other thing I did want to say earlier that I just remembered. One thing that was really hard is Morgan went to a children's hospital all the way until she went to college. And when you get to be at that like 15, 16 age, children's hospitals are really not geared towards that age anymore. They still wanted to bring around the children's games to play. And, you know, the graphics on the TV stuff were all very childlike. And, and they talk to you like you were a child. And I think that's a big missed opportunity for health systems and providers at that age range to stop talking to them like they're 5 years old, you know, and talk to them like they're a teenager. Mm-hmm. Morgan had one doctor that was extremely good at that. And he would come in and say, not how are you feeling and what's going on and whatever, but tell me about what's going on in your life. And she developed a relationship with him where she would tell him a lot more things because he was interested in her personally, not just her rash and her weakness and her whatever. So I think that's a big opportunity, especially in children's hospitals.
That's good. Like, we've been talking mostly about you and Morgan and what you're dealing with, but here you are, a person who's an advocate and understands more about the systems and context of being, you know, having health challenges. If you're thinking about like policy and research related to this transition from a pediatric to adult, where would you like to see research and policy go that would might make it help more helpful for people who follow?
Not sure I have a lot to think about for that one. I think, I mean, Morgan's been involved in like clinical research stuff for a long time. And I think that was always a hard thing for me as a parent of signing her up for these studies. I knew she didn't necessarily understand what they were about. And would she make that decision herself 10 years from now? Because I didn't want to put her information somewhere and do something without, same with advocacy. Originally, she didn't want to tell anybody. And then, you know, we did this fundraiser and she kind of went out and said she wanted to tell her story. And then, as you know, she later became much, much broader advocate and speaks out. But, you know, I worry a little bit, you know, you're doing all this stuff as a child and maybe you don't understand the ramifications of it. So I tried to think from that viewpoint and explain and talk to her and whatever, but I think there's probably some framework that could be put around that potentially, or some guidance to patients at different age level appropriateness of how to explain things like putting your data out there and about data sharing and research studies and genetic information. Morgan's had her whole genome sequenced, you know, who has access to that data and really understanding all of that for children. You know, they may not make the same decisions as their parents. And then what ramifications does that have down the road? That's one area that I think could be developed a lot and have some input into. I think there's been a lot of research done on transitions and some different toolkits. The CureJM Foundation kind of references the arthritis one, the GOT transition, I think is what it's called. It's in that Kids Have Arthritis 2 framework, but I think it's called GOT transition. But it's a pretty good framework of what to do at different ages and how to guide people through that. So, I mean, I think making tools like that wider known is probably another good thing to do.
What haven't I asked you that I should have?
When Morgan made that YouTube video when she was frustrated in the hospital, or really she was just venting to me, and I asked her if I could record it because I wanted to send it to a few people, had no idea it was going to go viral and create all this stuff. But but it actually changed Morgan's complete perspective on her disease, on life, on her life possibilities, and gave her something to focus on in a positive light. And I think whatever that is, whether it's advocacy or whether it's some other thing, I think we have to help kids, especially kids that are dealing with chronic disease, find something like that. I think Morgan probably told you she was involved in a bad car accident. And so she's had to go through a whole nother layer of healthcare challenges. And memory issues and scarring on her face and brain bleeds and all this stuff. And it's been a different experience than a chronic nature because it was also acute and seriously urgent. But I think having that grounding of, I can do this. I know this is going to be a process. What's today isn't necessarily tomorrow. Like she already had a foundation for all of that. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people don't have that foundation until something crazy happens. Mm-hmm. She was so young when she was diagnosed, she doesn't really remember that part, but kind of this whole auto accident brought it all back. I think getting people like Morgan, young kids involved in advocacy, if they're interested in it, helps. For whatever reason, I could tell you something and Morgan could tell you the same thing and it'll have much more impact coming from her as a young person. Mm-hmm. It's just raw and it has an impact.
Yeah.
So I would encourage more people, if they're comfortable, to become more advocates, mm-hmm. More advocates in their space, but also to help people find that one thing, whatever it is, mm-hmm. it helps them have a positive outlook. I think that grounds people and helps them get through all this stuff.
This is a little off topic, but just since I'm sitting here talking to you, one of the things that I've been more and more aware of is being a person of privilege, that I'm a white man that can live comfortably within his means, that I have a loving family, that I'm able to build a good health team, and I'm health hat. And I have that I'm a patient, a caregiver, a nurse, an informaticist. So a lot of doors open for me. And so my approach is the door opens, walk through it, like I'm, whether it's PCORI or CMS or ARC or National Academy of Medicine, whatever. I know that I'm selected for things because I'm a person of privilege. But then my responsibility is I'm one person,
Right.
And my experience is not really generalizable to anything, And so then my responsibility is to bring somebody else on.
Agreed.
And I see with somebody like Morgan and actually some other people that I've interviewed, what you just said, the passion, the eloquence, the rawness, is just so attractive in terms of it opens your heart and sort of gets past the brain barrier.
Yes. I think it's been interesting because Morgan has inspired some other kids in the JM community. They all get IVIG for the most part, IV immunoglobulin, and Morgan goes in the hospital once a month, has to get it infused over like an 18-hour period. But one of the girls in her group is trying this kind you can do at home. But she does it several days a week subcutaneously. And she's being brave and videoing her getting it and posting it out.
Wow.
I think, the more people you can kind of bring along, I think other kids have been interested in trying that because they've seen her videos and I think it's important to help bring people along, as you said.
Yeah. It's certainly easier to hear from your peers.
Yes.
I don't know if you listened to my podcast of this week, but it was, what can you learn from the clowns when you go to the doctor's office?
I did, yes.
It was just interesting. Jay Stewart, who was the clown that I interviewed, was just talking about how people react to people who are experts, like a doctor, and that there's, just something hard to open yourself up to people that you perceive as more knowledgeable than you, better than you, whatever.
Well, there's another girl too in their JM group that started, a lot of them have to take methotrexate shots, and a lot of the kids actually develop nausea at the sight of the needle even before they ever get it.
Yes.
And so this one teenage girl, Jennifer, she would video herself giving her shots, and a lot of the parents would show that to the little kids and they'd be like, look, this is somebody who can do it herself. She gives herself her shot. And it helped. The little kids are like, oh, okay, I want to be like her. So I think it's good.
That is good.
I did actually think of one other thing too.
Okay.
One of the other challenges we had with Morgan is her disease is, and she may have told you this already, but her disease is a juvenile onset form, but there's also an adult onset form. And
okay.
They have some similarities, but also a lot of differences. Mm-hmm. But because it's rare, the adult rheumatologists have usually seen adult patients, but they have not often seen a now adult juvenile patient. Mm. And so thankfully her doctor that she got at college is phenomenal. Like, he has been so amazing. He even taught to the medical school there about Morgan's disease after having her for a while. So he's really been amazing. But she came home for one summer and was going to see a new adult rheumatologist there. And he was like, you know, I'm surprised you haven't outgrown this already. She was like, and then, you know, he was like challenging her like, oh, well, that's not really a symptom of this or whatever. But he only knew the adult form. There's a real challenge of, I've heard this from other people that have juvenile onset forms, like diabetes even, I've heard it from, mm-hmm. that a lot of times when you transition, they forget that you're not like the adult form. And it's a really big transition challenge to get people to understand that your form is different. Mm-hmm. Just because you started as, you know, just because you have the same name doesn't mean you have the same disease.
Mm-hmm. Amy, a pleasure.
It's been great to talk to you.
Take care of yourself. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
That was chock full of pearls, wasn't it? Wisdom about joining a combined parent-teen support group to help navigate life that isn't medical, otherwise known as most of life, trusting in your young adult children, supporting positive expressions and activities for you, the people at the center of care, self-care, and the implications of decisions about health data sharing and clinical trials on your child. Amy supported Morgan's transformation into a citizen expert. Kudos. Follow my blog, podcasts, and resources through my website. See you around the block.